if democracy is foolish enough to give us free railway passes and salaries. That is its problem. We are coming neither as friends or neutrals. We come as enemies. As the wolf attacks the sheep, so come we. Joseph Goebbels, propaganda minister of Nazi Germany, 1933 to 1945.
Berlin, Germany, February 27th, 1933. On a cold night in Germany's capital, a university student was walking home from the library. As he passed the majestic building that housed the German parliament, he heard the sound of glass breaking inside and reported this to a police officer making his rounds. A few minutes later, a typesetter at the newspaper run by the powerful Nazi Party reported seeing a man with a lit torch moving inside the same building, the massive Reichstag. At nearly the same time, a man wearing military boots and a black coat entered a Berlin police station to make an anonymous report that the Reichstag was on fire. Within minutes of this report, the glow of flames could be seen through the Reichstag's towering glass dome. As fire brigades fought the blaze, an explosion rocked the building. Top leaders of the German government soon raced to the scene of the burning building. First to arrive was Hermann Göring, a member of the Nazi Party who is the interior minister of the German state of Prussia. Next, a black limousine pulled up, carrying the recently appointed Chancellor of Germany, Adolf Hitler, and his chief of propaganda, Joseph Goebbels. After surveying the scene, Hitler began shouting that he knew who was responsible for the fire. "There will be no mercy now," Chancellor Hitler vowed. "Every communist official will be shot where he is found. The communist deputies must be hanged this very night." Even as Hitler raged in what has been described as near hysteria, a suspect was already in custody. Police had arrested Marinus van der Lubbe, a 24-year-old mason from the Netherlands. Naked to the waist and sweating heavily when captured, Lubbe told the police he had been a member of the Dutch Communist Party's youth organization. Investigators said he soon confessed to setting the fire, determined to make a defiant protest against the conditions of the working class. But did he really do it? To this day, mysteries about the Reichstag fire remain unsolved. Was it really part of a communist plot? Or had someone else staged it? Who was the anonymous man in the black coat who reported the fire? Had the Nazis orchestrated the incident to create a national emergency where there was none? Was it all a ploy to falsely paint the communists in a bad light, considering the threat they posed to Hitler and the Nazi Party? The Nazi press immediately described the fire as the work of the communists and a signal to begin a general uprising. Yet historians are not certain that this account of events is true, and the origins of the fire remain unclear. True or not, Hitler convinced Germans that his bold actions had saved the nation. The known facts are important to show how a dictator comes to power and how quickly democracy can die. On this fateful night in 1933, Adolf Hitler was not some self-appointed despot who had taken control of Germany at the head of an army. In 1932, Hitler had run for the presidency of Germany, finishing second to Paul von Hindenburg and raising his profile in the nation. Germany's elected president and a revered war hero, Hindenburg then appointed Hitler to the post of Germany's chancellor on January 30, 1933. Under the German constitution, the chancellor held great authority, similar to the prime minister of Great Britain. The aging president Hindenburg had offered the post to Adolf Hitler in light of his growing popularity and fears of the Communist Party. Hitler needed little persuasion to seize Germany's reins of power. Born out of the ashes of its defeat in World War I, the German Republic was a modern democracy. The Kaiser, the ruler of the old German Empire, had given up his throne in the last days of the war, and the provisional government held elections for a constitutional assembly in 1919, elections in which women had the right to vote. A right U.S. women would not be guaranteed for nearly two more years. The assembly met in Weimar and drafted a new constitution based on the systems of both the United States and Great Britain, two of the victorious allies which had defeated Germany. The Weimar Constitution specified the equality of men and women and included protections for individual freedoms similar to those guaranteed in the U.S. Bill of Rights, including protections for laborers that were not granted to American workers. With guarantees of religious freedom, Germany's new constitution created a tolerant atmosphere, attracting Jewish people from Poland and Russia. The individual protections and political rights did not stop there. Under this constitution, the Communist Party was a legal group, mostly representing the unemployed, the working classes, and the poorest Germans. Germany had been hit hard by 4 years of war. Allied blockades had limited some food and medical supplies, and Germany suffered horrific war casualties and the effects of the deadly Spanish flu, which killed 400,000 Germans. By the war's end in 1918, the country was in tatters. With few jobs, a generation of young men wiped out or crippled, and food being rationed, a dark, desperate mood was spreading. The communists, whose ultimate goal was to overthrow the existing economic and political order, offered a stark choice to angry, hopeless people who saw no future. After the war, Germany's economy was crippled. Inflation, the rapid increase in the cost of goods and services, made German money almost worthless. Imagine going to buy a pair of jeans that cost $50 when you see them in the shop window. But when you get to the cash register, you're told they now cost $1 million. This was happening in a time when there were no credit cards or ATMs. German people actually had to push money in wheelbarrows in order to shop. George Grosz, a German artist who lived through this period, later told how difficult it was to purchase food. One had to buy quickly because a rabbit, for example, might cost 2 million marks more by the time it took to walk into the store. A few million marks meant nothing, really. It was just that it meant more lugging. The packages of money needed to buy the smallest item had long since become too heavy for trouser pockets. They weighed many pounds. People had to start carting their money around in wagons and knapsacks. I used a knapsack.